our children back to China and let them imbibe, you know, instill into them some Chinese culture, and so that they will have a more balanced life, which is a normal thing. The Germans do that. Mm-hmm. The Scotch do that.
Yeah. So for the ones
the Dutch
who,
do that.
For the ones who couldn't afford to send their kids back there, and their kids grow up more Americanized,
mm-hmm.
Would that create any problems within the family between the parents and the
kids? Sometimes they do. Sometimes. But if they live in a big city where there is Chinese school,
mm-hmm.
they or some kind, they would take the father to drive them into town and park them in a school and pick them up in 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever the time they used to teach the language. And usually, most of them do that, you know, if they can afford it. I know of a family who runs a truck, you know, a big truck. And every day at about 4 o'clock or something, he would place the three children back of that big, huge truck and dump them into a Chinese school and pick up the children after school, be it 7 or 6 or 30, daily. And then Saturday somebody else can help him, see, because you can borrow people on a regular day to do the chauffeuring. And there are families like that. And then they say if they don't learn something, they learn something. If they don't learn a lot, they learn something. You know, in other words, some inkling is going to be.
So did parents try to encourage?
Osmosis, that's the word.
Yeah.
By osmosis.
Did parents try to encourage their children just to associate with a lot of other Chinese children, or would they mind if their children's friends are mostly non-Chinese?
No, I don't think that they particularly say that you shouldn't mix with non-Chinese, but there is a tendency, which is a natural tendency, for them to play with their friends' children,
mm-hmm.
or the neighborhood, children. They wouldn't go out and they never drive, they don't have a car, they don't have this skateboard, you know, and they don't have the bicycle for each of the kids to, you know, I run 5 miles to see my friend from school. They just pick up the friends around them. And when the family get together, well, then they associate and get their, you know, that generation of friendship or association. I think that is the general way. But there may be specific, good families that have lots of time and money. They'll take the children every weekend to swim in so-and-so's home, you know, mm-hmm. or play golf or play tennis or basketball at their home, see, in the yard or something.
Christian, I hear, shall I say, supposedly the single Chinese men who come here, but when they come, they leave a family in the old country, in China. Then later on you find them getting married again. So what kind of conflict do they have?
That is a big problem. Up to the time when the immigration was eased up, you know, young man left home, seek fortune, future. He would leave around 18 or 17 years old, or maybe even younger, 16, with his uncle who's coming over, and they buy a immigration paper, or maybe adopted by, you know, the person that has the legal paper to come in the country. All right, then, all right, before you go away, we want the family to propagate, you know. Then they set up a marriage, they married, and they're usually not bad marriages, you know, just married. To us, we think, well, I haven't seen her, I'm going to marry her, you know. But to them, it's nothing, you know, that's the way they do it. They did it. Married, then they leave behind the wife. In a month in a few months later, I say the pregnancy took place and the child was born. And then the message came over here, he works harder, he's got a family, pictures were sent over, the wife's picture and all that. And the wife, to the Chinese wife at the, in those days, separation from the man, they're not that, excited about not having the man around for the time that they're waiting for him to come home. So they just become a good daughter-in-law. They marry the family for a livelihood. Now they have a child. See, I'm a bona fide wife and mother. That's the philosophy, you understand? And then I am a good daughter-in-law. Good daughter-in-law get the treatment. And then the letters exchange back and forth. Papa, young papa sent money home, $50 a month, which is $150 or more. And then they got money to spend. I got a husband in the Golden Mountain area sending me money. She's happy. All right, a few years later, maybe 5 years later or 4 years later, depending on the ability of the husband who is afar, he saved money. Does he have something to work for, towards? Then he went back to China again, and he lives there for 2 weeks, a month, whatever the time warrant that he can stay there. Then he has another son, another child to the family. Well, then it goes on like this, and some of them stay away for 10 years. Still the wife stayed on, and Zhongguan do the sawa. You stay on and maintain that your position. And you can use the modern philosophy to interpret that. They do that. It's just chastity, you know, that they have in the olden time. Okay, they stay until the husband returns again. And before you know it, some family just prosper because the husband works hard and that's the family comes in, they give more money, and it's just accrue their wealth and their fortune, and they're happy. Then, and yet on the other hand, there's a guy that comes over at the age of maybe 30 or 40, you know, went back to China, has a family too. But after he stays here about 10 or 15 years, he thinks he's a big shot and he has got money, and he's maybe he's able to be westernized. And maybe he, together with the other situation, he met a girlfriend. Then he got married. And then he wouldn't declare it over here, see? But or either one way or the other, he has to cover one of them anyway. And so, of course, you have a wife that is very unhappy about it. She can raise Cain and write letters to, you know, kind of scorn you and all that. But then on the other hand, sometimes they reconcile that. I understand my husband needed a companionship. He needed, somebody to take care of him. So but still I'm the big chief. I'm the number one wife. More Jing Fa Tai, you know. So they reconcile to that. That's another type, you know. And then she would, if he ever brings the second wife, the concubine, back home, she's got to jump talk her. You know, to salute to her. Then she's got that, you know, glory that I'm not so bad, you know. And then she doesn't miss the fact that he's living with somebody else. Because to a Chinese, a noble woman, she wants to be a good mother and a good wife too. And a good daughter-in-law. Those are the three criteria to make her deserve a pailao. You know, Hong Yu Zhong Xin Zhang built that pailao to honor her mother, you know, pailao. It's something like a, what in get it come joy, you know, see. In other words, something to remember this, nice, fine woman. And they do that in the villages. And if you have one like that in your family, you have a glory, just like you're having a big statue, you know, in your family. So that's a tradition. Now, you cannot interpret it, you know, today with the psychology that we have about marriage and all that, and the proximity of a man, and that a girl must have, you know, the sexual, you know, relationship and all those things. They felt that that can be, controlled. I don't think they even call it controlling. They said that, well, it's not that important. You know, I don't have to have chi every day, you know. I can eat it when I can, see. I mean, I'm just putting a little rough analogy. But I love my husband. He's making good over there for me, and he needs companionship. That's the way they're sympathetic about it. But if you have a little lion nest, you know, she's maybe fly over here if she has money and make a lot of trouble. But most of them don't. They just cry, maybe, mm-hmm. and then wish that you would send more loving letters and things back home, and then they reconcile to that. That's the way the ladies work in those days, you know. I can understand it, of course, but I do, in a way, because I lived there before.
In those days, there were a lot of men coming over here. Would you say more than half?
Yeah.
More than half people?
Yeah. Roughly, now. I haven't got the stat here, but from my observation that most people, you know, are gaji. Even today, the big merchants here are all gaji. What can you do? But it's their fault. You know, we're smart, huh? The Chinese, everybody has the right to come and seek for fortune. Why can't we? Because we have different pigmentation, you know? So my father, I have to thank him, you know, for getting the guts. He didn't need it. He gave a lady for. Yeah, I'm not going to let that, you know, they pull something over the Chinese eye. I'm going to fight it. I'm not a lawyer, but I am going to get a good lawyer in locally and bring him to Washington, D.C. and negotiate the lobbyists over there and make them listen to our story. And later on, my father dragged Peter Suhu and Hong Yu Zhong. Mm-hmm. Hong Yu Zhong was very late coming into CACA, you know, but there were no other person that is a lawyer, you know, in town before now, you know. Now we get a dime a dozen, a beautiful one. But at that time, he was the first immigration lawyer. My father got him to give a hand, and there's another fellow in San Francisco, Feng, Mr. Feng, of CACA. he was also a new attorney. But my father did all the, you know, scheming and write it all out, tell them to deliver. And so we won everyone that my father initiated, we won. I can't relate, but when I go into his papers, maybe I would be able to find, because I was a little kid then. I hear the Papa's going to Washington, D.C., and I stood in the station there. He's going away again, and I cry. Nobody else cried, but I said, gee, it's a long way to Washington, D.C., fundamental, you know.
Now, the people who use Jimen, what would they do in terms of their Zhongtan song? They go back to their real Zhongtan song?
Yeah, they do. But they don't list my name up there when you give hand out, you know. Don't say that. Don't give my name. But they do, you know, they help. They're still very close to the Klan. That Klan business is still strong now. With all the Americanization, the Klan spirit is very strong. And that's a good point here too, you know, then we have different pillars. But then you try to get them together, there's a little difficulty. You know that amalgamation is very tough, you know, for anybody. Like housing problem we had not long ago. We lost out because they were not together, you see. Okay.
What were some of the prominent clans, now that you're talking about
clans? Well, I tell you, when I think of the word prominence, I think of a family that has produced a lot of goodness to the community and very clean, you know, livelihood.
I mean, all very powerful, which, you know, I mean, if there was one that played a particularly important role in the affairs of Chinatown, were there any?
Not, in Los Angeles, not too many. They're all about the same. But later on, when I get a little bit more, you know, what you call, I'm going to give you that I answer that later on.
Oh, okay.
I have to be very careful because if I neglected one that I happen not to know, you know what I mean? But I do know of a few, and then you can add on to it, see? Because I have to be very objective, you know. You see, because I have my standard of prominent family, see? And at the same time, the community has, you know, there are some that make a lot of gambling money, they're very important too. But I don't want to cite them alone, but I want to get all the different types and let you folks, you know, use what you want to. Is that right? Is that
yeah.
The proper way?
That's
maybe I'm a school teacher, too, not too, too simple.
This, talk about something else that's interesting, is that when you were a child, during time of illness, your
what
family,
kind?
What kind of medicine did you go to, since your father was more advanced? Western medicine or Chinese medicine?
When I was a child, I had a case called mastoid at the age of 14. Let me cite one example. Then my mother said, I take you to Oi Wo Tong, Chinatown, and get some herbs and help you to, you know, relieve. And called my father that Lily was having a very severe headache, you know, up to the head there in November. I think it's the winter month of cold or something like that. You know. And my father said, no, go to Stanford Hospital. My mother said, how about wait a little for one more child to the Chinese hospital, I mean the Chinese herbalist, before we go. And then my father said, no, the doctor said, one more hour if you don't operate your daughter, I can promise that she'll be all right. The what you call would go into her brain. And mother said, reluctantly, okay, take Lily to Stanford Hospital. Stanford Hospital went in, and then the check said, yeah, the rest got to be operated. Into St. Joseph Hospital, I was wheeled into. And that's using American medicine. We spent $500 on account of this little, you know, scar. All right, then it's all over, then after a while. Prison this side has the same problem. Now this is a true case, you know. And then it wasn't so severe. My mother said, if I tell father, I'll save some money, take me to the Chinese doctor, you know. And then into Chinatown for Oi Wo Tong. Into that place I went, 35 cents a bag, you know, two, you know, two white bags of medicine. Mother brewed both of them. This is gone.
Oh. Now, at that time, were there a lot of yokchaipo in China?
Oh, yes. Yokchaipo, we have about half a dozen any time.
Uh-huh.
Because they all go into MoMA. They go in and say,
yeah.
Oh, the facil, the xiangfeng, blah, blah, blah. And they don't know anything about appendicitis operation, but they do fix up a lot of, you know, the... systemic illnesses, systemic,
right.
Like yitaya, all that,
yeah.
And the hong tong, and shangchong, and feng shap, they're pretty good at that. You know?
And besides medicine,
feng shui, huh?
Yeah. Besides medicine for people who are actually sick, did a lot of people like to have your choice, just to bowl, huh?
Sure, that's the daily, weekly brewing of the mother. if you have been eating a lot of fried stuff that week, you know, Mama would go to your temple, buy the liang cha, you know, the liang, qing bo liang, and they brew, and they're good. I tell you, they put chicken or whatever, meat soup, you know, and then everybody has to drink that at the end of the week, you know, or if you're very tay or choy tong, you know, dong gua tong, and with skin and all stick clean, you know, and that's good, you know, that we don't have to go to have a colonic, we call it, you know. You know, you clean your bowel by the natural means, and you have these vitamins rolling into your body. That's why the Chinese are so strong when they're small. Even, you know, they don't have to have a lot of meat to give them, you know, the stamina. They do. Mm-hmm. And then, some of them are even a little bit more exclusive. They want to buy certain kind of herbs, you know, to accent the spirit, you know, whatever, to increase their stamina, and those are sometimes helpful, because it's been used for generations. They're not written what good they do to you, but they know that it's good, and they find that it's very helpful. So in my case, I saluted to the Chinese medicine, and anybody that fight an herbalist, so I'm there to tell them that you give them a chance, you know.
Did any non-Chinese ever go to the temple?
They sure.
What for? What do they
hurt? I tell you, when they're almost hopeless with the American doctor, the diagnosis is so that they can't do a thing about it. They will say, "Well, I go to a Chinese herbalist," and before you know it, some of them get cured. Many of them get cured because they don't. You see, the Zhongguan cure in Chinese, they say, when you cure something, you have to cure from the basic, mm-hmm. you know, not from the superficial part of it. Suppose I have a boil here. The American doctor would scrape it out, you know, seal it, and you know, antibiotic, you know, to stop it from spreading. The Chinese, they don't do that. They give you some herb that would clean up your system, and not only this one, the other small ones, all of them are gone. See, the Chinese herb is good if you know how to use it, but you have to know how to use it. And even if you don't use the drastic type, it is not poisonous. I mean, it doesn't wound you. It may not give you the full effect, because I studied Chinese herb too, mm-hmm. just for the knowledge of it. My father too. He accuses the Chinese for, you know, saying that that's you know, trash or something like that. It isn't trash. Now the American doctors, the chemists, are studying what we have used as a natural product, you know, dried, dehydrated, to get the essence of it, mm-hmm. and not as a doga.
Mr. Chang, can you tell about some of the common remedies? Can you tell us some?
Well, there are two that everybody knows. Gam mo cha, you know, gam lo cha, and then lo hon guo is to, you know, lo hon guo. I have some of the wai san ge ji is for hormones, you know, wai san ge ji. I don't mean the kind that we use in the medical field here, that it strengthens a woman and the sexual glands, you know.
And
Fa Ke Sum, you've got to be careful. Fa Ke Sum, when you have high pressure, you don't use it. Fa Ke Sum is Qing Yu. It's something like quinine, a little bit. Like quinine, you mustn't take it too much, because quinine is good. But if you take it too much, it debilitates, you see. Fa Ke Sum is good, but you have to use the right portion. But these other know-how,
what's the kind in the wax
ball? Oh, that's the lap, that's the thin. Lap, thin, wax ball can contain
anything.
Oh. It may be something for the stomach, the baby's stomach when they have Gaofeng, you know, they have cholera or something, and they can use it, you know, flatten it for Hong Sa, you know. The last of them, if you want to, ask.
End of tape, one side B. End of side B.